Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
You know him, you love him, you look forward to him every Tuesday at 5 o'clock here with Wyman and Bob. The one, the only El Hombre, Michael Bradley, joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hello, Michael.
162-0, baby.
You're 4-0. Calm down.
Only 158 left.
That's right.
No kidding.
4-0, and they're in action as we speak, are they not?
Do you know the last time the Phillies went 5-0 was 1915?
No
Stop
way.
It.
No way.
Graz wasn't even born yet. 1915.
1915. Seriously. They have not gone 5-0 since.
And guess what? They went to the World Series that year.
My goodness.
That's ridiculous.
That's a good stat. I like that. I like that.
Yep.
Hey, before we get into baseball, what do you make of what we saw last night in that game? Obviously, everybody out here is very disappointed in how things ended for Gonzaga. They had obviously walked into that game undefeated, came off one of the great games against UCLA, and then just took a face plant. Do you put more? To me, it was a combination of Baylor just playing great and playing just ridiculous defense, but Gonzaga just looked completely out of sorts. So what do you chalk that up to?
I'm putting it all on Baylor, and I'm saying, you know, Gonzaga was out of sorts because Baylor played great defense. I think that the Bears understood that they were more athletic, and they said, we're going to make – it's the same thing that UCLA did to Michigan. They really pressured the perimeter. Every time a Zags player got the ball, he had somebody right in his face and had to turn a little bit to kind of protect the ball. There was nothing easy, and this was easily the most athletic team that Gonzaga had seen all year. And let's face it, it was the Zags and the Bears all year. Anybody who didn't have these two teams in their final game of their pool was fooling themselves. These were the two best teams in the country. We got the two best teams, and we saw that Baylor was more athletic, more aggressive, and then they shot the ball really well, too. And by the way, that shouldn't have been a surprise either. They had four guys on the team with 100 or more three-point attempts who shot 40%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you make of the whole thing with WCC versus Big 12? I felt like they went out and tried – I think FIU does that every year, trying to go out and schedule games. They had Kansas, who they beat, Auburn, West Virginia, Iowa, Virginia. I mean, these are all ranked teams in their preseason before they got into their conference.
No question, and they beat them all. And look, whenever a team loses at the end of the year, people get hyper critical about why they lost. Mm-hmm. This was a 31-1 team that came up one game short of a national championship in an historic season. They played against a very good. This wasn't Gonzaga losing to Valparaiso or something. Okay, let's not get it wrong here. This is a very good Baylor team. It's a very good Baylor program that's going to be a very good team again next year. That had a tremendous backcourt. I mean, when I saw them play Villanova, I knew Villanova had no shot once the second half started because they turned the screws tighter and Villanova couldn't match their depth and their athletic ability on the backcourt. Maybe Mark Few tries to schedule a tough athletic team in February this year. They tried to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, when everybody was just calling people up and saying, "Hey, you want to play?" They certainly right. tried to do it. But, you know, Duke used to do it. People used to say Jay Wright had to do it before he won his national championship in 2016 because they couldn't get out of the second round. So, you know, the WCC is not a good conference. I mean, no matter how much people want to talk about it, it's not a good conference. There's just not the depth. There's not the athletes. And, you know, but when Gonzaga got into the tournament, they looked great. And they won a real slugfest against a very good UCLA team. Maybe they were tired. You know, that's an overtime game. Baylor didn't have it as hard.
Come on, these college kids, you can't tell me an extra 5 minutes of basketball is going to
Well, it's not the extra 5 minutes. It's the first 40 minutes. And you know, you come back fewer than 48 hours later to play again against a really, really, really good team. You know, what's happening now with sports sciences and the knowledge of what happens to the body after these games, you can only get so far in grit and toughness. You have to be fresh. And I'm not making excuses. I'm saying it could well have played a part. But Baylor won that game. Baylor deserved to win that game, and Baylor deserved to win the national championship.
What did you make of the previous game against UCLA? That was one we were, you know, whether you're a fan of either team or not, if you're just a college basketball fan, I don't know how you didn't love that game, because it wasn't the first half was bad, but boy, the second half was good. It was good from the jump. It was compelling. You were on the edge of your seat. It goes to overtime, and then to win on a shot like that, where does that game rank amongst, I don't know, great games in your mind?
It's up there. It was, as you said, it was epic from the opening tip. And you know, here we're thinking, okay, the rebound, the layup by UCLA, you're thinking double overtime, and then the jump shot to win it from 35 or 40, whatever it is. I was at the Duke-Kentucky game. That game was absolutely amazing.
The Christian Laettner one?
Yeah.
Oh,
the thing I do, I was there as a fan. The thing I do with that one is I give the Laettner shot the edge because Duke was behind by a point. Mm-hmm. That shot, you know, if Suggs doesn't make the shot, we go to double overtime. If Chris Jenkins doesn't make the shot, we go to overtime. That shot, the Lorenzo Charles shot to win the national championship for North Carolina State, you know, they won the games. And if they didn't make the shots, they lose the game.
Was Tyus Edney's coast to coast? Were they behind or
unbelievable?
Was that, what was the score? Do you remember? Were they trailing or tied?
What year was it? I can tell you in about 3 seconds.
95? 94, 95? 90.
Somewhere around there. But Tyus Edney coast to coast was phenomenal.
That was a great play.
Yeah, we were going through some of the great, you know, highlights and finishes. Rip Hamilton against UW, you know, with the putback.
Yeah, they won 75-74. So it was a necessary, you know, you miss that shot, you don't get that shot, you don't win the game.
Gotcha. Yeah, we were so high after that UCLA game. It was such an epic game, and to win in that fashion, then to see that game yesterday was just so disappointing. Even if they would have lost, but it was a good back and forth, something similar to UCLA. Obviously, they're not going to duplicate it, but had it just been compelling and competitive, and okay, they got beat by the better team, but they got ambushed from the beginning, and it was done. It was just, you never felt like they were coming back.
Yeah, I know, and it was, you know, you're down 11-1, and I'm watching it. I'm going, this is not a bad team that you're down 11-1 to, and it's not an NBA game where 11-1 gets erased in a minute and a half. So this, you're right. This was just, it was a tough game to watch from the whole, if you're a Gonzaga fan, the whole way. And again, I really caution Zags fans against getting too low. This was a tremendous ride from November till early April. And while the job wasn't done, the championship wasn't won, please do not look down on this team one bit. This team should be celebrated for accomplishing a heck of a lot.
Well, as far as the sports science thing goes for these athletes, there's not enough beer drinking going on after games.
I agree. Lane, Mickey Mantle, you look at some of the all-time great Joe Namath. People don't realize this. If you read, I think Mark Kriegel wrote it, the great biography he wrote about Joe Namath. The night before the Jets won the 68 AFL championship against the Oakland Raiders to get into the Super Bowl against Baltimore, Namath, they had to go wake him up. Namath was out till like 3 or 4.
Yeah. Well, and who's
that's a real champion.
Well, yeah. Dave was talking about hooning boxes of macaroni and cheese before games he would play, that he'd never considered food to be something you consider.
Well, and that's the thing. He was young. But now they're trying to make sure these kids eat right and everything, and everybody's doing it.
Apparently it works.
I mean, it does, you know. And you look at my favorite thing was before the Super Bowl, they had LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And they were saying, so what are you guys going to do for the Super Bowl? And LeBron, you know, you're going to eat anything special and whatever. And LeBron's going, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't eat chicken wings.
Not even
maybe,
one
maybe
day.
I'll cook them in a fryer, one of those air fryers.
Air fryer, yeah.
But I can't eat that greasy stuff. Anthony can. He's, you know, 25, 26.
Yeah.
but he can't do that. Oh, rats.
The other guy,
Matt. Phillies just went down 1-0.
Oh, that's it.
The undefeated season.
They're done. They're
out the
lose.
Window.
Knock
all
it
the
off.
Rest.
They came back down. They were down 2-0 to DeGrom last night and beat him. So I don't want to hear it.
Right. The other guy, by the way, was, remember Max McGee, the tight end for the Green Bay Packers?
Great story.
He was, I'm trying to remember. Do you know the whole story, Michael? Because it was like he was
sure.
out late,
McGee,
right?
The starting wide receivers for the Packers on that team were Carroll Dale and Boyd Dowler. And back then, you didn't go 3 wide receiver sets. You played with a tight end, and you had 2 running backs, and that was it. And you didn't bring in your backup wide receiver, okay? He didn't play. So McGee sneaks out after curfew, stays out till God knows when, probably 4 or 5 in the morning out in L.A. having a good old time. And then I think it was Dowler who got hurt. McGee comes in and scores 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. 138 yards.
Including one on a circus catch, a one-handed pass
right.
catch on a pass way behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Anyway, well, that was a long time ago, and that guy was probably running the equivalent of about a 4.8 40, and the DB was probably running a 4.75.
No, those Raiders DBs were good. You had Willie Brown out there. You had some players.
Yeah. Well, just the speed and the
strength. No, I'm sorry. I wasn't the Raiders. I was the Chiefs. You had the Hammer. You had Fred the Hammer Williamson out there.
Look at
his bell rung.
Look at El Hombre just spitting out the facts about that era. Good stuff.
That's all I know. I can tell you everything about that. I don't know what I had for dinner.
Hey, yeah. what do you make of we were just talking about and playing clips of Dusty Baker, who was responding to, you know, I'm sure you saw the inflatable trash can that was thrown out onto the field, and the fans are giving him the business. And, you know, Michael, the one thing I love Dusty Baker. I love him. Big fan of Dusty Baker. But I think it's the playing the victim. Is making me nuts.
Sure.
And hearing him, oh, nobody in those stands have made a mistake. And, you know, I'm sure they don't live in glass houses. And, you know, Carlos Correa months back, like, okay, it's enough. We're tired of it. I'm thinking, what are you tired of? You didn't even play in front of fans last year. You never, you know, Dusty saying we paid the price. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You still have the title. You still have the trophy.
Yeah, you still have the trophy. Nobody really got suspended. And again, I hate the victimization stuff. I hate the proving my doubters wrong crap. I can't stand it. That's what it has become now in sports. Unless you're picked number one at the beginning of the year and go wire to wire, you can go sit in front of everybody and say, everybody doubted us. No, they didn't. And by the way, now, I am not one for profanity. When I go to a game, and you can hear, my voice is still scratchy because I was at the opening day on Thursday. I've never yelled as much as I have, and I mean in a long time, because we were 12 rows behind the Phillies dugout. There were only 8,000 people there, so I could be heard, and I was going to be heard. But I never use profanity. I never use foul language. I don't use scatological humor. I just am like,
well, there goes half of my routine.
But my point is, you shouldn't do that. You can be clever enough, and you can ride people without being profane. And if the players don't like it, please grow some hairs. You know, please get a little bit of guts. Stop being a baby and stop whining. I love Dusty Baker, but the victim thing, please. You're going to be – the fans have been waiting for this. I need the Astros to come to town. I need it. I will go to StubHub and buy a first row seat behind the dugout. I don't care how much it costs.
Are you going to bring in some sort of a sign or an inflatable trash can? Or what are you allowed to get into the stadium with, you think?
Well, it depends. What can you get into the stadium? You got to walk through a metal detector, so it's not like I can bring a metal trash can with me. I mean, that would be rather tough. Maybe I could pay somebody off. This is Philadelphia, after all. But who knows? You know what I'm going to bring? A leather throat.
Leather throat.
So he can be heard the entire game.
Oh, I got you. What, you got any ideas? Are you starting to write things down, or are they just in your head?
It's too early. I don't know when they come to town next.
All right.
I work on deadline. I'm a journalist. I'm no good until the deadline starts.
Okay. I like it. Yeah. Well, as far as baseball goes, Mariners doing their little rebuild out here. Oh, you know what? I know what I wanted to say to you. I really miss the old school toughness, and I don't think this is an old fashioned thing. The old school toughness of just ignoring people's comments. You know, I mean, I feel like that has some mental. I think we're at an all-time low as far as mental toughness goes and emotional toughness. you know, how people respond to things that either hurt their feelings or don't go their way, whatever. And, you know, it seems like that's the one thing. I'm not sure if you agree with me, but that's the one thing I feel like is really missing from this era, because you're right. You know, the chip on the shoulder and everybody responding to every little thing that's negative. And, yeah, just have, you know, some of these guys have the radar ears. They're listening to every single thing, or their friends are telling them. And that would be one thing I would love to see make a comeback.
Everybody's got the skin of a grape right now, all right? And I'm going to tell you something. What was the rule when you were a kid? If your buddies came up to you and said, you know what, we're going to call you Stinky, what was the one thing you didn't do in that situation?
Cry.
Or say, don't call me Stinky.
Yeah, because then you're going to get called.
You're 85 then.
That's right.
So you don't protest. You swallow it, you take it, and then you hope it goes away.
Yeah.
And these guys are making so much more money than the players in the 70s who used to get a pile of garbage, you know, yelled at them. And you're going to get upset. You're making $35 million and you strike out and someone's giving you a hard time. You're going to flip them off. What, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That's, you're right. Stop being so sensitive. Stop being so needy. You have to recognize me. You have to give me respect. I don't have to give you respect. You earn my respect, pal.
Yep. Hey, we were playing a clip from Rex Ryan earlier, and he was talking about Zach Wilson at BYU, saying, you know, he's great at this, he does that well, this well. He wasn't a captain on that team, and pointing that out as somehow being a red flag, and, you know, comparing it to Josh Rosen in some aspect, although he hasn't heard the same things about his personality, but just that's something that you keep in mind. Is that, and Dave and I were talking about it, that's straight out of Draft Day, the movie with Kevin Costner,
yeah,
where they talked about the, you know, nobody came to the kid's birthday
party. Nobody came
to
his birthday party, exactly.
So do you look at, is that too deep a dive, or do you look at that and say, you know what, that's a good point?
I would say it's a point. The bigger point with him is the level of competition he played. You know, it's one thing to do what he did against the SEC or the Big Ten or the Pac-12, you know, Power Five conference. He did it against a collection of misfits. So you wonder, what's he going to do in the NFL? I think there's one quarterback that's a sure thing in this draft, and it's Trevor Lawrence. And if you're the Jets and you're going to throw everything on Zach Wilson, good for you, but you could end up with a guy who's, you know, let's look at the history of Jets starting quarterbacks over the past 10, 15 years, 20 years. Hasn't been really that spectacular. Mm-hmm. So it's funny. I was talking to Brock Heward about this last night.
He answered your call?
Are you kidding me? he couldn't wait to. I called him. He said, "El hombre." We were, you know, these kids get more training than ever before. At age 10, they're in quarterback camps. They're working with special therapists, and they're starting as freshmen. They, you know, they go to college and they start for 2 or 3 years. And then come in the NFL, they can't do it. It's really strange why it's so difficult to find the quarterbacks who succeed in college who can transfer that to the pros.
Yeah, it's so funny to listen to the different analysts, and we talked about this last week. Michael, I think you said maybe one or two of these five guys make it. I agree. But, you know, the thing about how one group of people will see, you know, we've seen with Mac Jones, for example, everything from he's Joe Montana to he has no athletic ability and will never make it in the NFL, and everything in between.
I always look at it this way. Who's saying it? If it's ESPN or NFL Network, I don't believe a word of it. And the reason is they've got to promote the teams and promote the league. So they're going to make it sound like the guys who come into the league. Every draft choice who's chosen on August 29th, 30th, and May 1st is going to go to the Hall of Fame. Even the seventh-round backup tackle from Coastal Carolina. Because they want to make the next – they want people to get excited about the NFL. Every first-round draft choice fills exactly the need that the team that drafted him has and is going to be a star. 10 years ago, the Eagles drafted Danny Watkins from Baylor, a guard who was a fireman. He stunk. I mean, first round, stunk. And yet when he was drafted, this guy's got everything you need to start at guard for 10 years.
It feels like Philadelphia doesn't ever say that about anybody they draft. They always boo. They're not happy.
Well, we're not happy in general, but you know, we hold people to a high standard.
Yeah. You guys are tough. All right. Well, listen, he is El Hombre. Michael Bradley is with us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. You can follow him on Twitter at Daily Hombre. At Daily Hombre is where you find him on Twitter, crowing about the Phillies, who are still undefeated but trailing right now, right? 2-0.
Doesn't matter. We got him right where we want him. It's the Mets, don't forget. Mets on a Mets, remember?
False
that.
Sense of security in those Mets. That's what you're doing. So
absolutely.
All right, man. We will talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
That was better. That was better than last week.
A little off the rim.
Last week, it danced on the rim for a while before it went through. Our thanks to Michael Bradley, again, with us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Coming up, where does the Mariners' offense find its rhythm? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
A reminder, if you've got a smart speaker in your house, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM and it becomes a radio right there for you. Very, very easy, and you never miss a moment of the show. That's the goal in this whole thing. The question is, where does this Mariners offense find its rhythm? And to me, it's they don't have it yet, certainly. You look at it, a lot of walks, a lot of controlling the zone, as they like to say, with the young guys, especially with Fraley, who has 8 walks so far in 4 games.
His on-base percentage went up since yesterday that we talked.
Yeah. His batting average.
2 more walks last night?
2 more, yeah.
Yeah.
2 more. Average has gone down, on-base up. But at some point, these guys have to hit. And to me, it comes from the veterans. It comes from Haniger, who is hitting. He's about the only one who's truly hitting right now. It comes from Seager. It comes from Murphy to a lesser extent. Although, as a catcher, you always sort of qualify your expectations. I've never understood that. You figure a catcher who's seeing a ball more than anybody, watching the rotation of the ball, the spin, the movement, 100 times a game, they should have a better feel. And I understand their bodies get beaten down as the season goes on, but you figure they might start out hot.
You brought that up yesterday. I hadn't thought of that because we talked about Ohtani.
Yeah.
And being a pitcher and knowing, you know, kind of having a little inside information on what pitch is coming, what I would do in this situation. Same thing with the catchers. But, yeah, and the big, strong guy, I mean, I really root for him. It was tough watching him.
Well, he doesn't have a hit yet.
Yeah.
He's 0 for the season so far.
And then he had the catching error last night, so I always root for Murph. I like him, and it just seems like everybody on the team loves him. He's just one of those guys. He's almost like a mascot. Like, everybody loves Tom Murphy. But yeah, it's it's interesting coming up here. It's going to be a tough one to get going. I mean, you've got Chicago and Minnesota coming up here. Predictions by most people is that those two are going to finish 1-2 in the American League Central. Then you have coming up Baltimore after that, but then you got Houston and the Dodgers, both supposed to win their division. So, yeah, it's going to be tough coming up here as far as they're going to be facing some good pitching, and you've got some young guys that are going to go through some tough times. So, you know, I'm going to be more excited about the defense and the pitching than I am. the hitting, I'm not looking forward to too much. I'm not expecting too much. But, you know, the one guy I can't wait to see is Ty France. Let's see how he does through some of this tough pitching. And, you know, all he does is hit. Shannon Dreher, who came in today, was on with Jake and Stacy. She changed his name to He Can Really Hit. Ty, He Can Really Hit France.
So that's very wordy.
We said it's kind of, might want to get some initials. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he's able to do. And he's been in the DH that's looked pretty good so far.
Yeah, it's and those are the guys. I mean, he's a younger veteran, if you will. He's not a first-year guy the way, you know, the first full season for Evan White, first full season for Kyle Lewis. That's the other part. Kyle Lewis isn't even in the lineup yet. Isn't expected back, I think, in 2 weeks is the last I heard. Two weeks. He's starting activity. I'm looking at this tweet here.
Yeah, there was something he started today that was...
Yeah. It says, this from Jen Mueller again, Kyle Lewis ready to take the next step in his rehab, feels good after hitting in the cage yesterday. He'll up the intensity by adding in some plyometric work before working up to jogging. or it could be yogging. It could be a soft J.
Yeah.
Soft J there. But so you talk about baby steps. He's not even jogging right now. So you're looking at a couple weeks before he's back in the lineup.
Yeah.
It's got to be the veterans. I'm not counting on Evan White and you know, the younger guys to carry you through this, and all of a sudden Jake Fraley is going to find his rhythm, get red hot. Maybe they do for a stretch. But if you're just talking about how do you find a rhythm offensively, you're looking to experience. You're looking to Mitch Haniger to continue with what he's doing. Ty France to pick up where he left off last year, or left off in spring training. Kyle Seager. I mean, you look at them, again, it's four games, so you take it for what it's worth. But Ty France hitting .231 right now. Seager, .188. Murphy, .0. Doesn't have a hit yet. So you're looking at the veterans. Those are the guys that are going to help steady the ship while the other guys get their feet under them.
Yeah, well, and that's how it's going right now. Mitch Haniger so far, very early in, but .353 right now for Mitch, which is fantastic. But, you know, Ty France second at .231, and then that's pretty much it. Well, the next one's Kyle Seager, and there you go. There's your sort of more veteran type of guys. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes. We were talking to Blowers today, and he was talking about Taylor Trammell and how happy he was about him. And
he's back in the lineup tonight, by the way.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Wasn't in the lineup last night.
Right. And they had the interview of him the other day, and I think Mike has seen just what we've seen, and probably more because he was down at spring training, getting a chance to talk to him. So if as far as the younger guys and unproven guys, who do you think is the most likely to produce the most offense?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, Fraley with this, yeah, it's the average continues to go down, but he does have an –
and he struggled in spring for a long time.
Yeah.
You know who I think it might be is Evan White. Mm. I know there was a lot of swing and miss last year, and he's only hitting .188 right now. But I think he's carrying himself. He just looks to be a little more confident up at the plate, and maybe that's me just trying to read way too much into body language and everything. But if we're just talking about young, unproven guys that might take that step, I think it could be him. Fraley I'm not sure about his bat, to be honest. We just haven't seen it at any point. I like Evan White's swing. I think it's a little bit long, but he's aggressive. Mm-hmm. He swings hard. He's going to make a count when there's contact made. And, you know, you got him batting in the cleanup spot. So, obviously, Service has seen something that gives him a level of confidence having him there. I guess I'd point to him. I would count Ty France as more of a veteran, even though he's still a young guy as well. He's 26. Not old, certainly. But not as young as 23-year-old Trammell or some of these other guys. So I don't put him into that equation. He'd be the obvious choice. But of the truly young guys, I'll go with White.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm going to go with Dylan Moore. You know, I like that he's got two stolen bases, seven strikeouts. So he leads the team in that.
He's too old. He's 28.
Yeah. I mean, but he's new, right?
Yeah, he doesn't
have
a
new guys.
Yeah,
so.
he's got very little. He played 113 games in 2019. Yeah. Played 38 last year and this year.
All right, he's out because he's 28.
He's way too old.
All right, let's go with Taylor Trammell then.
Okay,
go with Taylor Trammell. But no, I like the way Dylan Moore plays. I love, you know, four RBIs, which he's leading the team. But yeah, Taylor Trammell is just. I feel like, and I mean, I don't want to get too excited too early, but he sure does seem like a mature guy. And he's got six strikeouts, three walks, important walks, and a couple of RBIs. But, you know, he's done all the things that you want to see, disciplined at the plate, made some good plays out in the field, the sliding catch, the throw out at second. We got Longoria, I think, on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been exciting watching him play and come along. And I feel like he's got the maturity that he is going to be. You know, it's funny listening to Mike Blowers talk about him. He was like, yeah, he was out there laughing and joking around. And then when the game started, he said he could see him kind of clinch up a little bit.
As he was jogging to the outfield, like,
yep.
Now it's real.
Yeah. And it's funny how Blowers can, you know, recognize something like that because he's been there.
Sure, he probably remembers that feeling.
Yeah. As do I.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I got on the field against Denver. Well, it was on a kickoff or kickoff return I probably was on. But the first time I got on defense – I was on the other side, and John Elway looks over, and we're at Mile High Stadium, and he winks at me. I'm like, what a jackass.
What a jerk.
Oh, man, I was mad.
How old were you in your first pro game?
Oh, I was probably 22.
22.
22 years old. But, yeah, I mean, that's how you feel. You realize, like, wow, I've been, like, watching these guys forever. And, you know, one dreamed of being a baseball player. And here he is, Taylor Trammell, starting out in center field. So
he doesn't he seem like he would have the temperament to handle a slow start? That's how it appears. I mean, we don't truly know him yet, and he's never gone through it, so we'll find out. But just listening to him, he's a very light guy in terms of his personality. It seems like it'd be hard to get him angry or him to get too down or beat himself up. Right. He feels like, all right, if a young guy's going to struggle, and he will, they all will, he's going to have the right temperament to work his way out of it.
Well, and I just think his family, I mean, everything that you hear about him, he's just a well-grounded guy. So he's going to have, talked about this, emotional, mental toughness is a huge part of sports.
All right. We'll see what happens tonight. He is back in the lineup, so hopefully a better outing against the White Sox tonight with the big maple on the hill. Coming up, how do we judge Gonzaga's season? It's disappointing the way it ended, but there's a lot of it that we hadn't really discussed yet. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got the Mariners pregame show coming up at the top of the hour. Game two of their series against the White Sox with the big maple on the hill. Stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, we're all living in the agony of the Gonzaga season coming to a crashing end. It was just a brutal game that nobody enjoyed, unless you're a Baylor fan, of course. So how do you view the season? Because we've gone through the, you know, people, oh, they choke. They always choke. You didn't complete the mission. I get the disappointment, but it's hard to go into the final game of the season when every other team except one has been eliminated and you have not lost a game. It's hard to look at that as anything, but it's not the ultimate success because you didn't complete it. But I don't think you can look at it and say they choked or that's a failure. You didn't achieve the ultimate goal, but going undefeated into that game is still a pretty special thing.
Totally is. I mean, it just, well, and look at who they played. Baylor, they had only two losses. I think they were 27-2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, this is a really good team, and there's something to be said for matchups. And there's also something to be said for, you know, if different things had happened, we could have seen a totally different game. I mean, if Baylor doesn't hit the threes that they hit early on, especially, you know, maybe that's, you know, they didn't even have a three, Gonzaga. I don't think they had a made three at halftime. So, I mean,
it was a bad half.
Yeah.
Turnovers, missed shots.
Yep.
Poor defense.
Totally did not look like themselves. And, you know, and Michael Bradley was talking about all of the, I get it, all of the physical things now and how, yeah, I mean, you're, the science of, you know, nutrition and all these, you know, sleep, everything.
Five extra minutes.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I mean, I can't get with him on that one.
I can't either. But, you know, if anything, you might say, hey, look, they were excited. They're on a roll. They have momentum. You know, after that, like, nobody's going to stop them, right? I mean, you could make that case, too. Fact is, nobody really knows. You know, everybody's different. But, yeah, I don't see that you could possibly think that was a failure. And I don't think that there's any extra pressure. You lost one game to a really good team at the end. In the meantime, Mark Few has just built an incredible dynasty out there. And it, to me, it's always amazing that they're able to pull these players out of there and, you know, out of all these different places, Texas, you know, like where Timmy is from, or California, when there's all of these big-time, you know, would you love to go play basketball at UCLA? I mean, they've got a good coach down there. They're doing a
nice, rich tradition.
Yep. Yep. I always liked Mick Cronin when he was at Cincinnati. I always thought, like, he had the toughest teams. And so, I mean, there's lots of competition out there as far as recruiting. And instead of, you know, Spokane, again, I love Spokane. I think it's a great city. I love going out there, but it's not this metropolitan mecca. But it happens to be built up because of really one guy, Mark Few. Because he has built a program there. It's a little bit easier with basketball than other sports because you get two or three guys a year and you keep that pipeline full that are, you know, superstars. You can build a huge program, but it's just amazing what he's done out there. And, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the rest of the season, especially when they went out, they sought out, and Michael Bradley was talking about this in February. They were trying to pick up extra games in places like that.
Well, they were scheduled against Baylor on December 5th. That game got canceled.
Canceled.
They had 5 games get canceled in that stretch between December 2nd against West Virginia. They won that game, and then they had 5 games get canceled and didn't play again until the 19th against third-ranked Iowa and beat them 99-88.
Wow. Was that at Iowa?
No, that was home.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, they're trying to pick up all of those games. Now, and the reason why I'm bringing those up is because the West Coast Conference, you know, BYU, St. Mary's, good programs. Every once in a while, Santa Clara's pretty good. But for the most part, you know, you're playing USD, I mean, USF. I mean, those are those kind of games not quite as competitive.
Portland, in the Pacific,
Big 12.
San Diego.
Yeah.
So I get when people rip their conference schedule. That it's not, you're not playing Duke, you're not playing North Carolina, you're not playing those teams. But, I mean, you just touched on it. I mean, the teams that they beat, you know, Kansas was ranked 6th, and they walloped them. They take on West Virginia, who was ranked 11th. They beat them 87-82, much closer. They had Baylor scheduled, that was canceled. But then their very first game back after the 5 cancellations in a row, number 3, Iowa, beat them 99-88. They beat 16th-ranked Virginia. They were trying, and they did beat teams that are outside of their conference that you could look at as power teams. And I understand they're not a Power 5 conference, but it's really hard when they've scheduled those teams, beat them the way they did, to then turn around after they lose and go, well, what do you expect? They're WCC conference. They don't play against the big boy. This is big boy basketball. I'm thinking, well, they beat big boys throughout the tournament to get to be one of the final 2 teams left standing.
Right. Right. And, you know, you look at some of the – they played Northern Arizona. Okay, they beat them by 30, you know. You know, BYU, they beat them by almost 20.
How about Dixie State? I had never heard of that before.
Me neither.
Dixie State.
They beat them pretty handily.
112-67.
That's pretty big walloping right there.
Dixie State. Have you ever heard of Dixie State?
I have to say, I have not. Anybody know their mascot? Text it in, 710, 710. Dixie State mascot.
Trailblazers.
The Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Okay.
I only know that because I just clicked on their link.
No. You, if you were a texter, Bob, you'd be like, yeah, I knew that.
How do you not know
that?
Dummy.
Aren't you guys sports radio guys?
I don't know. It's I get disappointment. Makes perfect sense. I'm not even a huge fan, as we talked about, but I was extremely disappointed. So I get the disappointment, but man, it's hard not to appreciate what they accomplished this year. It really is.
Yeah, and I don't think that they're not going to get less popular as far as recruiting. We talk about a couple of the, you know, major recruits that they're getting. So it's, and whatever they do there when they recruit, they do a good job because they get great players in there, and they'll continue to. So, I mean, look, it's disappointing, but the sting will start to fade a little bit here.
And they're favored to win it all next year.
Already.
Yeah, maybe that just provides more pressure. I'm not sure. But heck of a season. Didn't end the way you wanted it to. But there you go. One of the final 2 that were standing. All right, that does it for us. Want to thank our guests today, Mike Blowers, John Clayton, and El Hombre, Michael Bradley, for joining us on the show. If you missed any of today's show, or any day for that matter, head to 710sports.com, click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture, click on that. Each and every day, anything you missed is waiting for you right there. You got the Mariners and the White Sox game 2 coming up. The pregame show happening coming up next. We're back tomorrow with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.